So, welcome to The Good Robot Andes, season 1, episode 13, or
season 2, to be discussed.
Or to be discussed.
Yes.
Season 2, episode 1.
Okay.
Because there was a break.
There was a, yeah, listener, there has been a break. We're very sorry about that.
So it's one of them. We'll decide afterwards whether it's season 1, episode 13, or season 2, episode 1.
Okay. Well, I mean, if we were to go by, you know, US television shows and British TV shows, which obviously vary in episode length, but most things that are not network TV in the United States run for between 10 and 13 episodes. So,
right.
So
we did 12.
Yeah. Yeah.
Americans normally do 24, don't they?
That's for network stuff. They do 24. Oh, but
I don't think we're at that level.
No. We're definitely cable TV on a minor channel somewhere.
Yeah, without the quality of Wayne's World.
with no production values.
Speaking of production values, so I was checking whether we'd had any feedback.
And have we?
The answer is no, we've had no feedback.
Okay.
So no one's corresponded with us, but please do correspond with us if you're listening to this. But then I went and looked at statistics about whether people are listening. And it seems like there are some people listening. Like, I mean, it might just be robots or something, but it seems like there are some people listening. So hello, if you're listening. But more than that...
Hello to the robot.
What I... Yes, hello to the robots.
You will soon be our overlords. We love you.
Hello to the people, if any.
Yeah.
But what I noticed was the episode to which most humans or robots are listening is episode 6, which was about society.
Oh, really?
And what's notable about that episode is, number one, it's about society.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, the audio quality is horrible. Probably the worst of all of our episodes.
Yeah.
So that clearly means people don't care about the audio quality. And number three, the beginning of that podcast contains some banter.
Hello.
So,
sorry, I thought I lost you on Skype then.
So that was just some dead air, which is a contrast to banter.
Okay.
So I suggest that what we should do is we should start each episode with humorous banter.
Yeah.
Like well before this point in the podcast, because we've lost everyone.
I have performance anxiety now.
So we should definitely, there should definitely be some banter. I mean, it's too late for this episode because we're 3 minutes in.
So it's never too late. It's never too late.
We shouldn't bother.
So if I understand you correctly, people want banter and they want rubbishy audio quality.
Yeah.
And they want us to talk about obscure 1980s horror movies.
Well, yeah, I mean, that part I'd be happy to comply with.
Okay. All right. Well, it's interesting you should mention that because Bride of Reanimate has just been re-released on Blu-ray. So,
did you say Bride of Reanimator?
Reanimator, yes.
That's not a film I've heard of before.
Okay. I think it's the third in the Loose Reanimator trilogy. And I haven't seen it. I have seen the original Reanimator. I've seen Reanimator 2, which I didn't think was as good as the first one. But Bride of Reanimator is one that passed me by.
I haven't seen any of the Reanimator films. And someone told me the other day I must see Eraserhead.
Yes.
Which I haven't seen either. So I thought I liked horror.
Well, is Eraserhead a horror movie? It's a very strange film. I think... Have you seen The Elephant Man?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Could have lived without seeing that, really.
Okay, well, you may not like Eraserhead, because Elephant Man is kind of like a very mainstream version of Eraserhead.
Right. Well, perhaps its mainstreamness was my problem with it. Or perhaps it's just because it was made before people lost their attention span.
It's very slow. Yeah.
Well, all films, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
All old films are slow.
That's true. Okay, is this banter? Is this good enough?
I don't think it is.
Okay.
But it's what we've got.
So we need some banter for next time.
So what we haven't done is said what the film is.
Okay.
We're a long way in already. We haven't said. So the film that we're going to be talking about this evening is...
The Witch.
And my name is Andy Balaam. Yes, this is.
My name is Andy Cockerill.
So that's us, and that's the film that we're talking about. So this podcast is a podcast in which we talk about a film. It contains spoilers. We'll talk about it, everything we feel like about the film.
Yes.
But our unique hook is that I haven't seen the film.
Yes.
And yet I will summarize the plot of the film based on its title, which Andy told me.
But although you haven't seen this film, it's been released fairly recently, and you do know a bit about it, I think, because you heard Mark Como talk about it on his radio show.
I heard a review of it, but I've cast that from my mind.
Okay.
In order to come up with a plot summary.
Alrighty.
So I believe purely from the title that this is a film, it's a spin-off from Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. It's about the Queen from that. It's that she's the witch of the title. But it's also, it's live action, and it's basically, it's that kind of transported into a high school setting. So it's the witch from Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, or the Queen, whatever. She's called the witch in this. This mm-hmm. doesn't make any sense. But she's in a high school setting. She's one of the gangs of people in the high school, you know, and their adventures and the nice guys win.
Okay.
It's got a couple of famous people in it.
I actually quite like to see that film.
Right.
Because I'm pretty sure it's probably more entertaining than Snow White and the Huntsman or whatever the film is out at the moment. Winter's War, blah, blah, right. thingy. Winter's War, colon, something, something.
Colon.
Yes, no, you are incorrect. You're as wide of the mark as you possibly could be in this case.
Excellent. Well, it's unfair this time because I know what the actual film is about vaguely.
Okay.
So it doesn't even count.
Shall I fill in the gaps? Shall I give you a synopsis?
Do it.
Okay. So this is directed by a man called Robert Eggers. It's his debut feature film. It was made last year, released early this year in this country. And it's set in 17th century North America. And in it, a family who have been banished from their settlement for being too pious, because they're sort of religious types.
This is some kind of pilgrim settlement or something.
Yes, that's right. They come into contact with a witch, and as they come into contact with this witch, they start to go mad. But you don't know whether what they're seeing is actually real, or whether they are suffering from malnutrition, or bad food, or a combination of both of those things, dehydration. Because basically they've rocked up in the middle of a wood and they've got no food. They're harvesting.
Okay, so yeah. Where were they living?
Okay,
where are they living now?
So very briefly at the beginning of the film, you see that they've been living in a settlement with a big fence around it.
Mm-hmm.
And they get banished from there and they go and live right next to the woods. And they build a house.
These are scary woods, are they?
Yeah, scary looking woods. And the film, very early on, sets out to show you that there is a real witch in the woods.
Okay.
And this real mm-hmm. witch steals a baby boy, a family's baby boy, takes it into the woods, sacrifices it, and then we see in a kind of very dreamlike sequence this witch flying towards the moon. So, you know, she's kind of made a flying ointment out of its body. So so there is a real witch in these woods, and that in setting that out, it gives it a sense of dread.
Mm-hmm.
But then I'll go into this in a minute, but as the film progresses, you start to question whether, yes, the witch is real, but is what the family is experiencing actually real or not?
Mm-hmm. Including that first
No, I think that first bit does actually happen.
Okay.
It's because the baby does get abducted and they never find it. Although they go into the woods to try and find it, they never actually manage to recover it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the parents who are extremely pious Christian types, and they're played by Ralph Ineson. He plays a character called William. Now, he was in The Office many years ago as a traveling salesman, a guy who pops up a couple of times in the British version of The Office. And his wife is played by a Scottish actress called Kate Dickey. And they have four children. They had five, but they have four surviving children. Thomasin, played by Anya Taylor-Joy. She's a sort of pubescent girl. Harvey Scrimshaw, who plays Caleb, who's slightly younger than Thomasin. And then there's twins, Mercy and Jonas, played by Ellie Granger and Lucas Dawson. And Thomasin is sort of has what you would call burgeoning sexuality. You know, she's on the cusp of womanhood. And she's becoming confused about that because her brother Caleb appears to be looking at her in a funny way, you know, like he might be attracted to her. And she plays up to that.
Mm-hmm. And there's no one else around.
There's nobody else around. Yeah, exactly. And the twins, who are much younger, they taunt the billy goat, the family's billy goat, who's called Black Philip. And they, in a way that kids do, claim to be able to communicate with him.
That he's that like Black Francis?
from the Pixies.
Yeah.
He doesn't look much like Black Francis. He's actually quite a menacing-looking billy goat that I personally wouldn't taunt.
I heard mention that you'll never look at a goat the same after watching this film.
Yeah, that is true. If you go to the interwebs and watch the trailer on YouTube, there's a couple of shots of Black Philip. They're very brief, in which he rears up on his hind legs and looks like nothing you've ever seen. And it looks like he's been CGI'd to be more menacing looking. But having read a lot about this film, they shot a lot of footage of Black Philip, and he did actually do that. You know, he did actually rear up on his back legs and kind of shake his front legs in a very menacing way.
This is after they tortured him for weeks. Presumably.
So the twins claim to be able to converse with Black Philip, and this is kind of ignored by the parents. You know, they just think it's kids being kids. Until Thomasin and Caleb go into the forest together.
Is Thomasin the oldest?
Thomasin is the older girl.
Yeah.
They go into the forest together to check traps. And they take the horse. The family's got a horse.
Mm-hmm.
And Caleb, the horse gets spooked.
Mm-hmm.
And Caleb runs off. And Thomasin runs back, eventually manages to get back home. And, you know, Caleb's lost in the forest, presumably also been abducted by the witch.
Mm-hmm.
And although William goes into the forest to look for him, she can't find him anywhere. He can't find him anywhere, rather.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, Caleb returns naked and with hypothermia, you know, shivering in the rain. And he's sort of having fever dreams and screaming and shouting. And there's an incredible scene in the sort of loft room of the house that they live in, where Caleb is having, you know, what looks like some kind of seizure, and they pull an apple out of his throat. And as he's having this seizure, the twins are copying what he does.
Oh, wow.
And it's just noise and
scary children.
Fury and scary children.
Scary children
yeah.
Are up there.
That's right. And mum going you know, basically losing her cookies whilst all of this is going on, and father trying to keep it all together.
Mm-hmm.
So Caleb dies, and that leaves them with the twins and Thomasin, and the mum, Catherine, blames Thomasin for his death.
Okay.
She thinks Thomasin is a witch. So,
okay.
So all of the three remaining children get banished to be with the goats.
Well, all of them?
Yep. They all get put out there because basically the family are losing their minds, and they think that the three children are, you know, possessed.
I think they're all witches.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning, William comes outside to find the animal, the sort of barn area has been broken into. The goats have been murdered. The twins mm-hmm. are missing.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomasin is standing there alone, covered in blood.
Right. Laughing.
Yeah. Well, kind of, yeah. You know, she's witnessed something out there.
Right,
something's
right.
happened. Mm. And he's about to say something, and Black Philip the goat basically gores him in the stomach with his horns.
Right.
Once. And William goes to pick up an axe, and then Black Philip hits him again and kills him.
Okay, so now are we to think now that Black Francis killed all the children?
Well, we don't know. We still don't know. Because while this has been going on, we're not sure whether what we're seeing is real or if the family are suffering from malnutrition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there is indeed, as we've been led to believe, there is a witch in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the final shots of the film, which is one of the most... just before that, Thomasin speaks to Black Philip, and Black Philip becomes a human.
Whoa.
Yeah, you don't see him become a human, but you hear something off screen because she's sort of looking at the camera,
mm-hmm.
and then you hear him speak. And he
right.
says, and he basically says, "Will you give yourself to me completely?" And she mm-hmm. and she says yes. And then mm-hmm. the one of the final shots of the film is Thomasin looking out at the woods. And you can see that she's looking at something, but you can't see what it is. And you really want the camera to move so that mm-hmm. you can see what she's looking at. And we can only imagine what she's looking at. But mm-hmm. she then goes into the woods with Black Philip, who is now looking like a goat again, because basically, mm-hmm. you know, he's always been a goat.
Because
he's a goat. And she walks into the woods, and she sees four naked women, dancing around a fire, doing sort of incantations.
Mm-hmm.
And she walks up to join them, and then they all start levitating into the air. And that's how the film ends. And it's it's an incredible film. It draws you in a way, you know, it portrays what's going on absolutely down the line. You know, it doesn't try and fool you in any way.
Mm-hmm.
But you're never entirely sure of what you're seeing is actually what you think you're seeing.
So what's the atmosphere? You know, is it grimy? Is it, what is it?
Yeah, so it starts out fairly ungrimy, you know, sort of fairly,
mm-hmm.
you know, they're sort of living fairly
clean. Domestic, cleaning. Almost.
Yeah, almost mm-hmm. domestic. But as Thomasin starts winding Caleb up and saying to him, you know, really to wind him up, nothing else, to say, "I'm a witch, you know, I go to the woods and I talk to the other witches and all this kind of thing." Mm-hmm. It's all a load of rubbish. As that begins to kick in and the food starts to run out and the horse runs off and you know, basically their world starts to close in around them.
Yeah.
It becomes increasingly grimy and increasingly desperate and sweaty and unpleasant.
Mm-hmm. I'm imagining that the camera is quite, the colour is quite unsaturated.
It is. And what's interesting about the camera work is that it stays fairly tight. It doesn't go for the big sweeping vistas of something like The Revenant or Dances mm-hmm. with Wolves or something like that. Mm-hmm. It keeps it very tight on the actors and also on the background as well. So you don't get big sweeping shots. And also the aspect ratio, which is, you know, the how rectangular the screen is.
Mm-hmm.
The screen is slightly less rectangular than a normal widescreen television is these days. And what that does...
You mean slightly narrower?
Yes. Yeah. And what that does is it gives it a sense of claustrophobia. Because it's not a big widescreen film, it focuses the attention very much in the centre of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, you feel very much that the world is closing in around these people and that they feel increasingly desperate in the woods.
Yeah. So it's the fact that it's in the past is sort of coincidental. It's just helpful to be able to have that kind of plot rather than it being...
Well...
It's not a costume drama.
It is it is definitely a costume drama. So...
Okay.
Robert Eggers originally thought of the idea for this film 3 years ago and then spent... Well, maybe 3 or 4 years ago and then spent 3 years researching New England folktales and also English folktales as well of witches. And... What he's compiled here is basically a lot of information that he's managed to glean from these folktales. He's put into one film about the kind of things that people experience when they thought that they were under the influence of a witch. These things are in this film.
So that slightly goes to what I was going to ask, which is, what's it there for? You know, is it there to creep you out or is it there to be about what it's like when people think there's a witch or something else?
Well, there's a lot going on here. I mean, it gives you an idea about what it's like to be people in a strange land. You know, these are first generation settlers in North America. So they don't speak like Americans. They all speak with Northern accents,
mm-hmm.
North of England accents, rather. And they are completely out of their element.
Right.
Because the crops that they brought with them from England don't grow in North America.
Mm-hmm. So they were okay when they were in the village, but it's too tough, basically.
It's tough.
Outside.
Yeah, it's very tough where they are. And before Caleb returns... they actually make a decision that they're going to go back to the village and, you know, sort of pay the penalty for their super piousness. But obviously they don't get the opportunity to do that because Caleb returns and then all hell breaks loose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So is it for fun? Is it in the following sense? Is it enjoyable because it's really creepy and it's fun to be creeped out?
Okay, so in terms of being creeped out, I wasn't actually massively scared by this film.
Okay.
It's not a jump scare film. It's not the kind of film that leads you down a corridor and then slams a door in your face to scare the wits out of you. It's not that kind of film at all.
But did you feel uncomfortable afterwards?
I felt uncomfortable whilst I was watching it, but not scared.
Right.
What it does is... in the way that, I was going to say The Exorcist, but The Exorcist has got at least 2 jump scares in it.
And it's also definitely scary.
Yes.
I think.
Definitely. But what mm-hmm. The Witch does is it very, very slowly weaves a spell of unease and paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel... the paranoia. You feel the desperation of these people out in the woods with no lifeline at all back to the real world, back to where lots of other people are. And that's what it sets out to do, is to make you feel what they are feeling, which is, they've run out of food, they've lost their horse. They had a dog as well that gets killed. And they can't go into the woods because there's something in the woods that wants to kill them.
They're stuck with Black Francis.
They're stuck with Black Philip and Black Francis singing Frank Black. Frank Black singing Debaser.
Gouge away.
That's what it sets out to do is to weave that spell. And it does
so it. Is that for fun? Is it for the experience of that paranoid feeling? Or is it because it's... Is it about the feeling or the story? Is it just about having a feeling? That's okay if it is.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's definitely about that. So it's about, right. You know, feeling like these people are feeling.
Mm-hmm.
and it's certainly, for its running time, which I think is something like an hour and 40 minutes, it definitely pulls you out of the world that you're in and immerses you into their world. For good or bad.
It sounds really disturbing to me. Like, I feel like I would be thinking about it and feeling creeped out afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, the reason why I wanted to talk about it today is because I don't know anybody else who's seen it. I went to see it with my wife, but I don't know anybody else who's seen the film, so I haven't been able to talk about it in any detail with anybody else apart from my wife. So I really wanted to get it off my chest.
So have you been having thoughts? Tell me some of your thoughts.
Okay, well, I think that it... it is a work, you know, it's a really great piece of work. It's a really great film from start to finish. It is, you know, what it sets out to do is, you know, sort of give you a view into what these people were going through, but also what they believed in. And the production design from the smallest things to the biggest things, the production design is absolutely spot on.
Mm-hmm.
And also the way that they speak, you know, they speak in these Northern English accents.
Are they Northern English actors?
Ralph, I'm not sure where Ralph Ineson comes from, but he certainly sounds pretty authentic. Kate right. Dickey is Scottish, but she does a very good Northern English accent.
Mm-hmm.
But Anya Taylor-Joy, who plays Thomason, she is, her first language for many years was not English. I believe it was Spanish. And she does an incredibly good accent.
Wow. That's hardcore.
It is hardcore. Yeah, definitely. So I would say that The Witch is definitely a horror film,
mm-hmm.
but it's not a jump scare film. It's a in fact, for our listener, this film is a lot like The Babadook. Which is a film that came out a couple of years ago.
I've heard of that. Someone mentioned it.
Okay.
On Kermode, I think.
Okay, so The Babadook is an Australian horror movie about a mother and son. We should probably talk about The Babadook, actually, in a future program, show, podcast. But so The Babadook is about a mother and son who are grieving for the loss of their, you know, her husband and his father, respectively,
mm-hmm.
who died in a car accident. And The Babadook represents... This is a spoiler, but we're going to talk about the film anyway. The Babadook is like a monster that lives under the bed or something.
Mm-hmm.
But he represents the spirit or the presence of the dead husband.
Right.
But in
a bad way.
In a bad way. In the way that... neither of them have come to terms with the fact that he's dead, properly grieved and got over the fact that he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So he's still hanging around as a presence when in fact, you know, they need to start to move on. And that's what the Babadook is about. And The Witch mm-hmm. is kind of an allegory for those two kinds of things. So The Witch is, excuse me, The Witch is, you know, kind of an allegorical story. As well as being, you know, you could take it as like a literal story. There's a witch in the woods and there's supernatural things.
Mm-hmm.
Or are there? There may not be any supernatural things at all.
Mm-hmm.
So
you still hold open the possibility that none of it happened?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Although you do see a witch at the beginning and you do see the baby. You don't see the baby get sacrificed, but you know it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you could take it either way. You could take it that everything that they experience is supernatural,
mm-hmm.
or you could take it that they want it to be, so that's what they experience. You could also take it that none of it is supernatural, mm-hmm. and that they're hallucinating because they don't have enough food and water.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is also a thing where some food can develop like mold or spores that cause you to hallucinate, rather like magic mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So there's various different ways that you can interpret this film.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, two of them don't involve any supernatural behavior at all.
Mm-hmm.
And the final scene where Thomason goes into the woods and she sees the people, the women, around the fire, she could be imagining that. We just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, everything, all bets are off because they've all been through this extreme experience.
Yes, exactly. And she's seeing what she wants to see at this point.
Okay, so she's basically, she likes the idea now that she's a witch.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe she's imagining it. Maybe she's hallucinating it. Or maybe they're really there.
Maybe she really is a witch.
Maybe she's really a witch. And, you know, maybe from the very beginning, she's been in cahoots with the witch in the woods to deliver her family up to them.
Yeah.
And you don't know. And that's why it's such a powerful piece of work. And because it's not a straightforward film, that's what makes it great, in my opinion. You know, it's thought-provoking.
Yeah, okay. So I was going to ask you why you liked it. You like it because it's well done, but also because it's ambiguous.
Yeah.
And unusual.
I think that if I'd seen a film where, you know, it was clearly a witch and you know, everything happened in camera and there's no ambiguity about the fact that it's a witch, I think that film would have still been quite enjoyable for what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But it would have been ultimately not very satisfying.
It could have had jump scares as well.
Yeah, it would have just been a straightforward horror movie. And don't get me wrong, I like straightforward horror movies. I like things like the Insidious films, Sinister. I liked Annabelle that came out last year or the year before.
I saw Insidious and I couldn't decide. I think it's a risk going to see a modern horror film because it might be so rubbish you just really wish you hadn't.
That is true. But I like those types of populist horror movies that Mark Kermode calls, you know, horror movies for people who don't like horror, which is fair enough. People who don't like horror can go and see these films and be scared.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know,
that's how you come to like horror, though.
That is how you come to like horror. And then you move up to stuff like The Exorcist. You know, it's like a gateway drug. But what the witch does is, it's ambiguous. It's very ambitious for a first project. Even though it's a small cast,
Is it reasonably cheap?
Yeah, I think so. I can have a look at a website, give you an idea of how much it cost. If there is one.
A website, yeah, they've got them on the internet.
I know, I'm looking on the internet now. I know, I can't see a budget anywhere. Oh, no, hang on. Well, it says how much it's taken. It's taken a worldwide $30.6 million as of April the 3rd, which is very good.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. And I should imagine it cost I don't know, probably about 10, maybe less.
Mm-hmm.
So it's done very well. So Rotten Tomatoes, which is the review aggregation website, gave it 90. Is currently on 90% based on 200 reviews, which is very good.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Okay, so people think it's good.
So what the synopsis on Rotten Tomatoes says is, as thought-provoking as it is visually compelling, The Witch delivers a deeply unsettling exercise in slow-building horror that suggests great things for writer-director Robert Eggers.
So, okay, so here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
it's going to be, the question's going to be, what's the point of it? But in particular, is the point of it, is part of the point of it to teach us anything about belief?
Yes.
Or is it to tell a story purely?
I think it, no, I think the point of it is to teach us something about belief. In terms of, if you believe that something is happening enough, then it is actually happening for you.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, to explore the power of belief over perception.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's one interpretation. Another interpretation is that, you know, they are malnourished, and then it shows you, you know, what happens to the human brain when it doesn't get enough food.
Mm-hmm. Explore the power of perception over belief.
Yep, exactly. It does that. And then also there's the third option, which is, this is all actually happening.
Which is to explore the
supernatural
power of witches.
Yes, yeah, the power of the supernatural. Incidentally, my wife, who is from sort of the Glastonbury area, when we were walking back to the car, she said, there's probably people in Glastonbury who do that kind of thing around a fire. Mm-hmm.
Sacrifice babies.
No, not
fly off to the moon.
Not that kind of thing, but right. Dancing naked around a fire.
Right.
She said that that sort of thing probably goes on.
It's like a Wicca thing.
Yeah. I suppose so. Although Wicca's quite a recent thing, which I didn't realise. It's not an old thing. It's
right. But it harks back to old things, doesn't it?
It does. It's sort of a best of old things, Wicca.
Best of old
things. Yeah, it's like, now that's what I call paganism.
Cool. Well, that sounds... Well, I mean, it saves time on, you know, properly investigating all the not-so-good pagan stuff.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Incidentally, there's a Beltane festival in Glastonbury on May Day.
What is that?
Well, Beltane is the old pagan festival of in what is now May Day. So
okay.
So you know, there's
a fertility festival.
There's pagan festivals for all of the what are now considered to be Christian festivals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those
pesky pagans came along beforehand and stole them all from the Christians.
Yes. You know, so there's one for Christmas, there's one for Easter, there's one for May Day, Midsummer, and then you know, round about Halloween, and you know, it's all of those things. So yeah, there's Beltane. There's going to be a parade through the town.
Cool.
Hopefully, it won't be like the Wicker Man.
Hopefully, it won't be like the Wicker Man.
No,
but it will be. It's a fertility festival, right?
Yes. So it's, you know, it's spring has sprung.
All bets are off in terms of what it will be like.
Pretty much.
It might be like that other bit in The Wicker Man.
The bit at the end.
No, I was thinking of the bit earlier.
The bit where Christopher Reeve is dressed as a woman. Christopher Reeve? Christopher... God. Christopher... What's his name? Dracula. Lee.
Lee. I was going with Walken, but no.
Now I'm saying Christopher Reeve in The Wicker Man. Christopher Walken in The Wicker Man would be
that would be good.
I'm gonna be in a fire.
I like that. No, I was thinking of the bit which is scarier than the bit at the end, which is the bit where she's dancing in the pub.
Oh yes, Ingrid Bergman. No, oh God, this is terrible. There's an actress called Ingrid Pitt in The Wicker Man, but it isn't her that's dancing, it's Britt Ekland.
Right, yeah.
I'm having many senior moments this evening.
Yeah, well, they'll come more and more as you continue.
Sorry, who are you?
Becoming more senior.
Where am I? Can I have my prunes?
That's one of the real benefits of old age, I think. Easy access to prunes. A steady supply of prunes.
A steady supply of prunes.
I really like a prune.
Do you? Do you like canned prunes or the dried ones?
No, dried prunes.
Yeah.
Canned prunes, it's difficult to swallow them without puking.
Can't comment on that, I'm afraid.
Okay.
Yeah, I only like the dried ones.
Yeah, they're nice. I like them a lot.
Yeah. So now that we've talked about prunes and things of that kind, have you watched Point Blank yet?
No. Sorry. I did watch John Wick, though. I was thinking about John Wick. I was thinking I'd quite like to watch it again.
But you could watch Point Blank instead.
I could watch Point Blank instead. I should really do that.
You really should.
I forgot about it. Yeah, I totally will.
Yeah. Defo.
It's going to be cool. Yeah, okay. I think we've probably covered The Witch since we're now talking about prunes.
I think we have. I don't think I have anything else to say about it. Other than I think that people should seek it out when it comes out on DVD and Blu-ray. It's worth VHS. It's definitely worth a look.
I think that you've convinced me that I would be glad if I watched it.
I think you'd enjoy it.
But I don't know whether I'll seek it out. I probably should, now that you've asked me to.
Yeah, it's good. It is extremely well made.
Excellent.
Indeed.
Cool. Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
So, a bit of plugging. Oh, tell us about your radio show.
Oh, yes. I host a radio show on Glastonbury FM 107.1 in the Glastonbury Street and Wells area of Somerset.
That's that 100 yards of Glastonbury.
In Glastonbury Street and near the Wells.
Next to the well. Between the two wells,
apparently,
one at each end of Glastonbury Street.
They should be getting a new transmitter soon.
Oh, really?
But they haven't yet.
And then you'll be audible in France.
Probably, yes. Sacre bleu and all that. Oui. So that's on a Thursday evening between 6 and 7. It's available online as well.
There's an eclectic mix of music
and
some non-spoilerific movie reviews.
It's definitely non-spoilerific. I sometimes have a guy who lives in Hollywood who I worked with many years ago on a film called Mark Tierney. He sometimes comes on the show and he gives sort of insider information on what's going on in Hollywood.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard one of them. That sounds really good.
There is a podcast of this radio show, which is highlights only. There's no music, but if you search for Movie Mashup, you'll find that, and then you can subscribe. And I had there's two chats with Mark, one before the Oscars and one afterwards, where, you know, we discuss who we think's going to win, and then afterwards we discussed who won, did they deserve it, and that kind of thing. So,
cool.
Yep. Okay, that's my plugging over.
What was I going to say about that? I don't know. I was going to say, yeah, so you slipped in there that the film you were involved in. What was that?
Okay, it was a film called Naked in London.
Uh-huh.
As far as I know, it's never been released. But it did give me an insight into the sort of the low-budget end of the film industry.
What did you do?
I shot stills, quite a lot of stills, and I shot some second unit stuff.
You're like a proper filmmaker. In an actual film.
Yeah, maybe. But
that's what you're getting, listener. Insights from an actual filmmaker.
Apparently so. I wouldn't consider myself to be that. I consider myself to be a lover of film rather than an actual filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm not a proper filmmaker. But on the other hand, in the plugging section, I have made a reasonably large number of YouTube videos whose production values are significantly below even those of this podcast. about programming, computer programming, which are still becoming more popular and reasonably popular. You know, it's stuff for beginners, it's stuff for people who've been programming for a while. I also write a blog, so you can search for Andy Balaam and you'll find this stuff. I also write a blog about programming, and my latest and most interesting project is an Android game called Rabbit Escape, in which you have to give little rabbits abilities in order to help them solve various puzzles and get to the exit.
Yes, it's a very fine, very fine game indeed.
Thank you, and there'll be more levels coming soon.
Oh, really?
And I think there will be a free version coming soon. But if you paid for it, don't feel cheated, because you'll be getting a lot more than the people who get the free version.
So will the freebie version be slightly hobbled?
No, the free version will be a full and fun, complete experience with at least 60 levels.
Yes.
Which is what I released the original game with. But the people who pay will get more levels.
Ah.
And hopefully won't feel too annoyed about that.
Okay.
I don't think they will.
I don't
think it only costs 60p.
I mean, how could you be annoyed about that?
Yeah, they're little rabbits.
Yeah, save them. Save the rabbits.
Send them to the exit before they burn or drown or fall to their death or just disappear.
To who knows where. Maybe they go to another dimension.
Yeah, maybe. But they're burning and drowning. Those are new. And they're so new that there aren't even any levels yet that have got them in.
Oh, it's a spoiler.
But coming soon, burning and drowning rabbits.
Okay. That sounds like
because we love rabbits. That's why we made the game.
That looks like a headline of a newspaper or something. Coming soon, burning and drowning rabbits.
So, just watch out for that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you.
I think that's probably it.
I think it is. Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.